Good day and welcome to the Magnet Quarter 4 2019 Financial Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Albert Avedikov. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Molly. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us to discuss Magnet's operating and unaudited financial results for the fourth quarter and full year of 2019. With me to review the results are our CEO, Jan Dunning, and CFO, Yelena Melinova. The announcement and presentation are available on our website. And of course, after our remarks, we look forward to taking your questions. I would like to remind you that today's financial results are based on the management accounts and may slightly differ from audited financial statements under IFRS to be reported by the company on March 16th. I will now turn the call over to Jan Dunning. Jan, please.
Yeah, thank you, Albert. Good day, everyone, and thanks for joining us. Let me start, like usual, with the key highlights before we jump into the deep details. First, we have opened around 2,400 stores on net basis and redesigned more than 2,300 stores in 2019. The selling space growth slowed down a bit while still remained double-digit despite high base. Sales growth in the fourth quarter accelerated on stronger trading in the like-for-like stores driven by traffic improvement. We've seen like-for-like traffic increase each consecutive month of the quarter across all formats. Positive momentum continued in January with even stronger like-for-like sales growth despite much, much lower promo activity. Gross profit margin in the fourth quarter weakened on the back of price investments to drive sales combined with slightly lower supply chain efficiency. Notably, both logistic costs and shrinkage were improving throughout the year. SG&A costs remained under control, where higher depreciation and amortization expenses, utilities, and rental costs were partially compensated by a reduction in advertising, packaging, and staff costs. EBITDA margin came below our expectations, mainly driven by stronger promo intensity and the introduction of our loyalty card. I'll get back to that later. Net income significantly shrunk due to gross profit dynamics, higher depreciation and amortization, and increased finance costs. Our guidance for 2020 reflects greater focus on efficiency of business processes, stricter return requirements, proper capital allocation and value creation for all shareholders. Now I will run you through main achievements and development of the quarter. The sales growth supported by like-for-like improvements on sustainably better traffic. Despite slower selling space growth of 12.7%, sales growth in the reported quarter accelerated to 11% and was supported by improvements in the like-for-like stores. Like-for-like sales growth was positive during 2 months of the quarter, despite negative quality of days in December. So normalized like-for-like sales growth would be around 1 percentage point higher. Like-for-like traffic was the key driver of sales growth and was recovering steadily each month of the quarter across all formats. In December, it turned positive, including in core convenience format first time for the last 3 years. This was driven by further improvements in assortment, shelf availability, and the loyalty card rollout. What we actually did, we have invested to get traffic up to show that our stores have improved. I would like to note that very significant contribution to like-for-like traffic came from matured stores, actually those that have opened before 2018. At the same time, the younger stores continued delivering strong double-digit like-for-like sales growth. Traffic was well supported by increased frequency of visits, which is partly related to the rollout of the loyalty program. Growth in the number of unique customers was another contributor to the hike in traffic. In the second half of the year, we have finally started seeing positive net inflow of new customers, coming predominantly from larger formats, regional chains, and traditional retail, evidencing positive customer reaction to our initiatives. Promo intensity remained elevated in the fourth quarter, while significantly eased in the beginning of the year. Promo share picked up in the reported quarter due to seasonal year-end effect. However, such growth was also explained by further inventory sell-off, deeper discounts not fully covered by suppliers, and faster than expected growth in loyalty card penetration. Although these price investments put additional pressure on ticket growth and margin, if not fully covered by suppliers, that allowed us to get customers in, showing all the changes and initiatives we had implemented in the stores. We saw quite aggressive behavior from some of the competitors, including large formats and some market disruptors. We believe that at the moment, our pricing is pretty relevant and attractive. Promo share growth slowed down in December without any impact on traffic, which continued improving. In January, the promo activity in our stores was much less visible compared to the fourth quarter, while both like-for-like traffic and sales growth showed further pickup. In January, like-for-like sales growth exceeded CPI level. And given that this year we don't have any effect from VAT changes, which was 0.6% last year, that makes our trading results even stronger. Of course, I would like to see this as a sustainable trend supported by both stronger consumer and quality improvements in our stores combined with healthy promo activities. Then, active rollout of the loyalty card adds incremental sales. We continue actively rolling out our multi-format loyalty card. The very first results came above our initial expectations, and we have reached already 58% of penetration in sales provided by around 20 million active cardholders. And penetration is even bigger in the larger formats. Rollout is expected to be completed within the first quarter 2020. At the moment, this is a pure price investment from our side, which is aimed to drive customers' loyalty, retaining and regaining new customers. We are targeting further quick uplift in penetration this year, which will allow us to start transformation of these investments into better supplier terms and better customer proposition. And of course, having lots of information on customer transactions will bring us new knowledge to improve marketing, category management, etc., to satisfy changing customer needs. Like-for-like ticket growth remained positive, although deteriorated to 0.3% in the fourth quarter, primarily driven by lower average number of articles in the basket. Shelf price dynamics was negative and in line with the official food inflation. Although record low on-shelf inflation put pressure on ticket growth, it wasn't the key reason for weaker check. Negative average number of SKUs in the basket was the main factor for such trend, especially pronounced in December due to the high base of comparison of last year. In the last year, the last month of 2018, we had the promo campaign, the Nutcracker, which stimulated actually consumers to buy larger basket, and we didn't repeat that in 2019. Trading uptrend continued and was even more pronounced quarter on quarter as a result of ongoing improvements in the assortment. Now I'd like to turn the call to Lena to comment on the financial results.
Thank you, Jan. Gross profit margin dynamics was negative in fourth quarter, driven by high promo intensity, further rollout of loyalty program, weaker supply chain efficiency, and higher shrinkage. Higher regular promo activity with deeper discounts led to increased investments into prices, not fully covered by supplies. The pace of the loyalty card rollout was faster than originally planned. And what is more important, we achieved higher than expected penetration ratio. This was another addition to price investments not yet covered by suppliers. Although at this stage with penetration of 58% in sales, we still consider this is a pure investment. Loyalty card becomes one of the major CVP elements. Growing on shelf availability, assortment change in large formats, and other factors resulted in weaker year-on-year supply chain efficiency and higher shrinkage in fourth quarter. However, looking into quarterly development, we see gradual reduction of logistic costs on the back of several initiatives launched in the second half of 2019. For example, tender for external transportation, review of delivery schemes, pooling with suppliers, and yet. The same dynamics we see in shrinkage. We have started the year with a very high base. So, although it increased by 55 bps in 2019 versus 2018 on higher share of fresh and ultra-fresh products and better on shelf availability, in fourth quarter, shrinkage already reduced by 39 bps quarter-on-quarter. We were seeing step-by-step reduction in shrinkage throughout the year. Since September, the gap between 2019 and 2018 has almost disappeared. And this trend has to be supported by further growth of the share of groceries. SG&A expenses remained under control. As you have seen from the announcement, SG&A as a percentage of sales increased by 38 bps year-on-year, and this was predominantly driven by increased depreciation and amortization, higher rent, and countrywide indexation of tariffs. Personnel costs slightly improved both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter, thanks to continuous automation of key business processes and optimization of the headcount. Staff turnover constantly improves, thanks to reduction of workload, optimization of induction program, and yet. We are well on track with organizational changes related to decentralization of front office functions and centralization of back office functions. Growth of cleaning expenses was caused by increased tariffs and higher frequency of cleaning as a result of higher standards applied to the stores in accordance with new CVP. Increase in electricity cost was related to annual indexation in July 2019. While on year-on-year basis, rental cost increased by 33 bps due to growing share of leased selling space to 77% in fourth quarter 2019, we see steady quarter-on-quarter improvements of lease terms, resulting in lower rental cost per square meter of selling space. And another factor is definitely related to better quarter-on-quarter sales density across all formats. Depreciation of assets in the fourth quarter 2019 was 50 bps higher year-on-year due to changes in management judgment of useful life of assets and impairment of assets in the amount of 1 billion rubles recorded in the reported period. Other operating expenses increased predominantly due to insurance costs as a result of introduction of insurance program covering all network of stores and distribution centers. The above increases were well offset by optimization of marketing and advertising expenses and improvement in packaging and raw material expenses. A reported EBITDA margin came below our expectation in fourth quarter, resulting 6.1% for the full year. EBITDA adjusted for one-off and LTI expenses came at 6.8% for 2019. As a result of the gross profit margin dynamics not fully offset by SG&A improvements, EBITDA margin in fourth quarter came below management expectations. LTI expenses contributed 0.12% in the reported period, resulting in pre-LTI margin of 5.5%, while for the full year, LTI expenses amounted to 0.50%, leading to EBITDA pre-LTI of 6.2%. As no one-off expenses were recorded in fourth quarter, adjusted EBITDA matched pre-LTI level, while for the full year, it stood at 6.8% as a result of previously announced one-offs. Net interest expenses in fourth quarter increased by 50% or 27 bps year-on-year due to a combination of larger average amount of borrowings and higher cost of debt compared to the previous year. As a result of factors mentioned above, net income in fourth quarter decreased to 4 billion rubles with a margin of 1.1%. Effective tax rate was negative as a result of amended tax declaration for the previous years with regards to deductible expenses. I would like to mention that normalized effective tax rate of Magnit stands at around 22% in line with the full year 2019. Net debt increased year-on-year on higher total debt and lower cash balance. You may have seen from our announcement that at the end of the year, we had a total debt of 184 billion rubles and the cash position of around 9 billion, resulting in a net debt of 175 billion rubles. This year-on-year increase was driven by first-half borrowings, while in the second-half total debt declined. Such dynamics was mostly attributable to acceleration of the redesign program and store openings, investments in buyback program, and two dividend payments within 2019 versus one within 2018. The net debt increase was due to higher gross debt and lower cash position related to different calendarization of payment days in 2019 and 2018. Net debt to EBITDA ratio was 2.1 times, unchanged versus end of the first half of 2019. In 2020, we see room for improvement in cost of debt with positive effects on the bottom line. CapEx in 2019 amounted to around 59 billion rubles. CapEx in the reported year was slightly higher than a year ago due to more store openings and redesigns completed in 2019. At the same time, it was lower than the guidance range as a result of stricter return requirements implied for all projects in fourth quarter and lower investments per square meter of selling space. Detailed discussion of CapEx expenditures as well as debt portfolio will be provided on March 16 when Magnit reports full-year audited IFRS financials. Inventories showed some increase within 2019 as a result of structural changes. You have noticed from the announcement that inventory level reached 219 billion rubles at the year end, increasing versus beginning of the year. This was partially related to continuous focus on shelf availability on the back of ongoing assortment review resulted in additional purchases. On-shelf availability improved across all formats. And other factors included organic growth of the company's store network, inflation in purchasing prices, and assortment mix. Fast-growing drogery business had an impact as well. Cosmetic segment reached record high of 8.7% of net retail sales in fourth quarter. With more expensive assortment in that format and lower rotation of such items, it had an impact on total inventories. The team achieved good results in reducing old stock bought before 2019 with insignificant amount left. As to the passive metrics, we now reach comfortable level of around 8-10% of inventories, which is in line with the industry practice. As you may remember, we had more aggressive plans last year. However, we underestimated impact from assortment change, uplift of on-shelf availability, and other factors. Going forward, we are not going to lower the stock in absolute terms, but we will target organic reduction of turnover days without pressure on promo share and margins. In 2019, we managed to improve payable days turnover year-on-year by 3.5 days to 45 days. And now I will give the floor back to Jan for guidance and closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Lena. Our 2020 forecast reflects greater focus on operating efficiency and optimization of key business processes rather than on faster growth. Before I go through the figures, I'd like to tell you that what is key here. It is definitely prioritization of our efforts on profitable growth and returns aimed to create additional value for stakeholders. Yes, there is a slowdown in our organic expansion to a moderate level, which is visible in our net opening targets for 2020 versus 2019, but it is still 1.3 thousand stores with focus on the best products in the strongest regions where we have high confidence of reaching acceptable returns. And we will continue our redesign program with another 1.3 thousand of stores planned for refurbishment as well in 2020. Of course, We will also continue to look for bolt-on acquisitions of small to medium size if such value-accretive opportunities arise. Our closure program is well analyzed. A considerable part is actually a replacement of older stores by better locations, as well as some closures in the weak catchment areas. In 2020, we plan to close around 480 stores. Notably, over 80% of closures will happen in the first half year, and more than 90% will be in the convenience segment. The intention to slow down expansion in 2020 should not be seen as a lack of confidence in the long-term attractiveness of the market, nor does it indicate a lack of opportunities. It is a sign of our confidence in Magniet's market position and our greater focus on value creation for shareholders. If environment becomes more favorable and our trading continues improving, we may revise these targets. With this, you see a spending from 60 to 65 billion of capex, while investments in organic expansion and redesign will slightly reduce. We will increase spending on efficiency projects focused on business development, such as optimization of supply chain and IT infrastructure and others. Our key focus this year will be on further development of loyalty program, balanced promo with better coverage by suppliers, continuous improvement of supply chain, expenses, shrinkage, further optimization of SG&A costs and reduction cost of debt to drive margins. All this is aimed to improve our ROICs and create additional shareholder value. Speaking on cash distribution to shareholders, Magniet has a long track record of dividend payments, which we do twice a year. This is definitely an authority of the board and shareholder meeting to decide on dividend payments. Meanwhile, I don't see any reason, business reason, to expect lower absolute amounts going forward. Some closing remarks from my side. We remain fully committed to fulfilling customer needs via the implementation of our adjusted CVP. We are focused on fixing and improving the processes of our core business while continuing to enhance cross-functional cooperation to ensure effective decision-making. We will invest in developing our human capital, private label offering, direct imports, and we will upgrade and modernize our IT infrastructure to optimize business processes. We're taking the first steps in the development of our omnichannel digital concept focused on new trends and overall customer journey, with all relevant instruments allowing to identify customers and their consumption patterns to structure proper advanced analytics and personalization, as well as to enrich our overall omni experience, including different potential ecosystem elements. Our main focus is now on profitable growth with efficiency gains in all the areas and business processes aimed at higher returns and value creation for stakeholders. Thanks for listening, and I think we're ready for questions.
Thank you, operator. We're ready for the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. We will take our first question today from Victoria Petrov from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for allowing me to ask the questions. Jan, you have been with the company for 1 year now. In this 1 year, I've noticed that operating profit dropped by 31.5%, net income by 50%. I can imagine that with your also relatively recent role, you have been discovering some news related to the company business model. And obviously, the guidance given on the 29th of October of 6.5% EBITDA margin for the full year has not come true. Could you please share what was new, surprising, what went wrong in November and December this year, and what can be fixed in the next two quarters? That would be my first question.
Thank you, Victoria, for this encouraging introduction. To be quite honest, it didn't go wrong in November, December. It was already wrong earlier. And what is wrong was that we have not anticipated enough the investments that have been done in an increase of promo share. It is clear that we have not optimized supplier compensation for those. Due to this, the commercial team experienced too late that gap was not able to close. And then on top, as you have seen, as of September, we have also started to roll out the loyalty program. And that was, by the way, that was a deliberate investment into margin. But we simply anticipated a different number. We thought that the penetration would be lower, looking as well at market experience with other businesses. And we found ourselves all of a sudden at a 58%. And that was a margin invest that we didn't anticipate. And that therefore, especially in November, December, when we saw that hiking up, we came to realize that, listen, this is where we have to make sure for the next year that we close that gap. Those are actually the most important elements. The good thing, though, is that, because you know I'm an eternal optimist, the good thing, though, is that this has at least translated into a pretty big traffic increase, which we haven't seen for a long time. And we see as well that now in December and in January, especially in January and the first couple of days in February, that translates well in like-for-like sales. So I think our main objective now is
for the fourth quarter.
Sorry?
I saw, but from the results, I see that traffic for the fourth quarter is still negative.
For the fourth quarter in total, yes.
-0.2%.
But for December,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for December, not mm-hmm. anymore. Yeah, and we see that has translated into better dynamics. So I think our objective for this year has to be to make sure that the activities that we develop on the commercial side are well enough covered by funding of suppliers or by different scenarios of getting margin balance different. And I think that's one of the things that we work on now, and I trust that it's going to work.
Thank you very much. So basically you expect positive traffic in the next quarters, and then you can ask for some rebates from suppliers to finance your loyalty card.
The normal procedure, Victoria, is that if you plan certain activities, that you go and sit with suppliers and ask for, okay, what kind of programs can we run? What kind of compensation do we get? Do we get that on invoice, or do you do that in a different way by exclusivity or whatever? Those things have not been covered enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also it's part of the learning curve
mm-hmm.
of category management, because that's what we haven't been too strong at.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. My second question is on gross profit. I also noticed that gross profit is down versus third quarter, when you had already this inventory sell-off. And we treated it sort of as a third quarter one-off, but it appears again. And it's also sort of treated as a one-off when I look at your definition of adjusted EBITDA. What exactly it is? How much is left? How should we look at it going forward for the next year?
We had, entering the third quarter, we had around 17 billion of old stock.
Mm-hmm.
finishing the year, we had 3.8 billion of old stock. So that's part
of the
estimation.
Is it the same as passive stock, or is it?
No, no. This is stock that was really old, bought before 2019. So it's not passive stock. The other ones are, of course, which came as a surprise, is simply the not fully compensated promo increase. I think that's a tough lesson, and that was not well organized.
So it should be really treated as a one-off and should disappear in the first quarter next year.
Yes, that's what we work on that day by day. So that will not happen as it did in the fourth quarter. And then also you.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, Victoria. Just I don't know where we dropped off. So just as a repetition. So gross profit impact in fourth quarter was higher promo share, higher loyalty than we expected, and not sufficient funding of suppliers in earlier month like October, September.
Thank you very much. If I may just also clarify on EBIT and EBITDA margin, do you understand it correctly that there was about 2 billion full-year LTI and around 400 plus million for the fourth quarter? Is it linked to the share price? Should we expect first quarter LTI to be higher given that share price performance, so at least so far, has been quite strong?
Okay, let me answer this question. You're right. So LTI total amount is 2 billion, and that's a fixed amount. Yeah. So if the share price will go up or down, that will not influence at all LTI expenses. That's all.
And it's not the subject to the number of team members.
No. It could be increased only if the other members will be included into LTI program, but it's immaterial, yes, as currently we see. So that's fixed, and it will not be increased due to share price increase. Okay.
So we should assume 2 billion for the next year.
Right.
Thank you very much. My pretty much last question is related to a comment on page number 13. You are saying that you changed methodology to account for rebate allocation between closing inventories and cost of goods sold. I don't understand why the adjustment was for 2019 was significantly higher for 2018.
That depends on the amount of bonuses, but by types, yeah, by category, which are accumulated each year. And second, that depends on the amount of inventory, which is on the balance sheet, because it's increased. The impact in 2019 is higher than in 2018.
But inventories have not increased by over 50%, and the adjustment has.
It depends on the structure, as I said. Yeah, it depends which type of category, the structure of inventory in the balance sheet, and the structure of bonuses which were collected. For example, if in the fourth quarter more bonuses related to jewelry or detergents, where we have higher bonus, then that means that the impact would be higher. And this year we had increase in our sales of these non-food categories where the bonuses are higher.
It was also the format that was growing the fastest.
Yeah.
So that had impact, yeah.
Yes. I also noticed that obviously your drogeries were growing, and wholesale related to mostly non-food, if I understand it correctly, has demonstrated significant growth in the fourth quarter. Can you disclose anything on the margins there?
We do not disclose the segment financial results,
mm-hmm.
as you know, but I could say that it's a low single-digit number for that format, or for that type of sales profitability we have.
Thank you very much. And my very, very last question is related to dividends. You mentioned that absolute dividends business-wise should remain flat, so net income decrease in net income would not affect dividends, basically. So your payout ratio would double.
One thing I want to state very clear. The dividend payments and the policy is defined by the board of directors. And the annual general meeting, AGM. But from a business perspective, I do not see reasons that we will see changes in the dividend policy as we've seen over the last couple of years.
Thank you very much for your answers.
Okay.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a telephone question, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star two. Once again, it is star one to pose a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal.
Hi, everyone. I hope you still hear us. Sorry for the technical issues with the line. We're still open for your questions.
And as a reminder, please press star one on your telephone keypad to ask a question. We have received a question from Yulia Gerasimova of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. I have two questions, please. So question number one is about the traffic dynamic. So when I actually see these three factors, such as high promo, as you mentioned, material decline in gross margin, and low basket growth, to me, these three factors actually point to very high intensity in the price investments. And that actually could have contributed also to the traffic improvement you have seen. And I wanted to understand how dependent is Magnit traffic from further price investments going forward. Do you really have to continue to invest that heavily to keep the traffic in the positive territory? And also to that, what actually gives you confidence that this positive momentum is going to continue? It was not just, you know, temporary event driven by, I don't know, like easy base effect and more active promo. That's my first question.
Yeah, thank you, Julia. Just to give you a bit of dynamics, I do think that the promo investments that we have done in October has led to an inflow of customers. But I think what happened after that was that our promo intensity came down, and in December actually it was, in comparison to the year before, just a bit higher, but not that much as we had in October. But we saw in the first time in the year that we had traffic plus in December. So what I think what happened is that customers that have come into our store in October have seen that the new initiatives and CVP, customer value proposition, that we put in place is something that brought them back. Because if we look at the dynamics of new customers, we see that actually we saw that in December the traffic increase was primarily led by new customers coming inside the store. Looking more specific at January, this period, we see the trend of slowing down of promo, but we see that traffic keeps growing. So what I do think in a nutshell is yes, the promo intensity in September, October has helped, but it has helped to convince customers that Magnit is again a place to go to. If you look at the dynamics November, December, January, you see that that is confirmed, and that's also obvious because the efforts on category management, the efforts on attractive assortment and relevant assortment have clearly been recognized by consumers, and that's why they're coming more.
Thank you very much, Jan. And just clarification to that, if I recall correctly, last year from November to February, you have a special promo action, which actually was aimed to increase the average basket size and which actually negatively affected the traffic. Could this easy base be also the factor that contributed to the fact that you have seen November, December, January as a good month because that promo activity lasted until February 2019?
No, there's actually, of course, we had a look at this because we took the decision not to repeat that action as we saw already that margin investments was already done. So why do an additional one? That action was the nutcracker in which customers spending a certain amount were getting a scratch card to get additional discount on an additional item that they would buy. So that action was more stimulating the bill, but was not traffic related.
Mm-hmm. Okay, understood. And my second question would be on the margins. This year, in 2019, sorry, you had the 6.1, but adjusted for the certain one-off 6.8, if I recall correctly. So do you think this 6.8 is more like normalized level we should expect the company to be at, given that no one-offs, assuming no one-offs will be repeated going forward? And do you think that we are already not going to see like a further declines from that level? It's more like we are talking about stabilization of the margins, given that given your initiatives of the efficiency and cost optimization.
Yeah, Julia, as you probably have noticed, we're actually not giving any indication on EBITDA. I think what you can expect from us to do is that we will be focusing on profitable growth, that we will be focusing on getting more control on income, that we're also focusing on which activities that we do, commercial activities, investments, do make sense. And last but not least, we're also now focusing on, okay, the loyalty card is so successful, how can we get more knowledge out of this in order to be more efficient in reaching out to customers, but also more efficient in allocating margins to certain activities. So you got it right that in the normalized EBITDA was 6.8, but I'm not going to give any indication. But in transformation, we think that we are in the right tone, that the business is picking up. And it might partly be also the macro, but it's good to see that we're at least exceeding sales growth, like-for-like sales growth now. So we're doing better than CPI, which I think is pretty encouraging.
Sorry, and my last question, just wanted to check about the inventories. I think Elena already mentioned some comments about that, but I'm actually still surprised that I think in the beginning of 2019 there was the expectations of some working capital release related with inventories, and you have been selling off, you know, some old stock during the year. I mean, why this guidance was firstly lower than not realized at all relating to inventories? Why and what should we expect going forward? Do you because if I recall correctly, one of the factors that should contribute to the return improvement was actually improvement in the working capital and inventory management as a key of that parameter. So, how should we look at the working capital and especially inventory management in 2020? Should it continue to increase inventory levels because of the structural shift into your business, or we should expect some positive impact on the free cash flow?
Now, I think part of the growth is connected to the mix change of assortment due to the growth of the cosmetics. You've seen as well that we will continue growing our cosmetics business this year, but we have at least set ourselves the target to not grow the stock levels any longer. We should try to be more efficient and get more rotation numbers in. So the idea is to with the same amount of stock, run simply a higher sales.
Thank you so much for your comments.
All right.
We will take our next question from Elena Zernova of JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good evening. I also have a few questions. First of all, Jan, Elena, I have to note that, in my opinion, there was some lack of consistency in the message of management during 2019 and quite a lot of unexpected developments and one-offs. And forgive me for that message, but I think I have to say this. So understandably, I know that you're quite cautious right now on guidance, but I would like to understand why in principle we have this situation. Is it because Magnit's business is so incredibly complex that forecasting reliably where the margins could be and where the working capital could be is just very difficult? And if that is the case, what do you need to see an improvement of that? Because frankly, when we were talking at the start of the year about potentially a very strong improvement in working capital, and I believe the market was already penciling that in the DCFs and in the earnings expectations, and now we see that effectively you most likely had a cash outflow from working capital instead of an inflow, and the same comment on margins, whereas you're giving guidance at the end of Q3 about the promo intensity, your plans to reduce that, and your plans for the margin, and still not there. So apologies for taking so much of your time, but in essence, why is it so difficult to simply to forecast correctly what the results are going to look like, and how can it improve in the future, in 2020?
Elena, you don't need to apologize. I think the apology should be from our side. I think what you mentioned is correct. We have had difficulties to forecast. Part is the mix change that we have underestimated, which had an impact on margins. Part was the loyalty program that was bigger than we expected. I think also the mix change has taken us by surprise with regards to stock. I think it took the team a while to understand if you push in that direction, then that happens on other sides. And also on the agreements with suppliers, not everything was covered with the activities that we were doing. And therefore, there's, from my view, a lot to improve. The forecasting problem is also, by the way, is something that we try to resolve as well. With we've started with Hyperion. We try to resolve now with investments in IT and ERP, because it's clear that the level of ability that we have there now is not sufficient and cannot be tolerated. So What our focus of the current management team is to get our hands on the business, to start to control, so that we also know, okay, what's happening if we increase our share of cosmetics? What does that do to the margin? What does that do to the stock? Because I think overall that has not been anticipated well enough. And a similar thing you can say about the promo activities. We simply didn't cover our back with the suppliers, and that's not smart.
Okay, thank you. And then I had some smaller questions. First of all, on the accounting change, Does it mean that we should now expect a sustainably lower gross margin for Magnite or no? Because I didn't fully get the rationale for the change, or rather not the rationale, but the details of it. But since it had a negative impact on the margin and the P&L, does that mean a slightly lower gross margin going forward or not really? I mean, I understand the impact is very small, but still for me to understand what's going on there.
Let me take that question. I think that the impact on marginality of accounting change will not have material effect in the future at all, especially if we keep our stock not growing in absolute terms,
yeah.
Then it's zero impact or close to zero. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing what might lead to is the mix change there, and that's what we're analyzing at the moment as well. Okay, what's the impact there?
Mm-hmm.
So the composition of the stock will change as the format growth is changing, and we're currently in the process of analyzing, and we get a good feel that that has to be done.
Okay, and also I would like to know how are the sales densities of the stores with new CVP and in new design, how are they performing versus like similar stores that have not been redesigned and still have an old CVP? Can you give some numbers on that, please?
Now, Lena, what we have seen, and that's more historically, what we saw is that in 2018, the remodelings were actually not delivering what we expected. But we see now that in 2019, in the combination of an operational and commercial improvements, that the uplift gets stronger. And that depends as well a bit on the areas where you look. If you look at Moscow, we see a pretty big uplift. But on average, it's 8 to 9% of uplift that we see at the moment. So that's we think that's encouraging, which means that that the combination, what we did in the past, only the navigation plus hygiene, of course, didn't give the uplift, then now in combination with the assortment. And we believe that now with the implementation of the loyalty card, that we actually will see even a better uplift going forward, as a loyalty card clearly is appreciated.
All right. And the final one for me is, if you are indeed seeing better performance of these revamped stores and the CVP is actually working, you're seeing better like-for-like traffic in December. January is also looking solid, as you say. So why actually cut the store openings guidance? I understand the point about closures. I see that, but it sort of doesn't make sense to me right now. Are you just simply too cautious because you want to see a few more months of sustainable improvements, or are you not sure that improvements come from the CVP, or they're just driven by price investments?
Now, Lena, maybe you recall your first question. So yes, there is a certain cautiousness on our side. And the guidance cannot be based on January only. So yes, we are influenced by what happened in 2019. But trust me, and you know me, if this is sustainable, we do not think that the market is limiting us in opportunities. What we do think is that we need, at the moment, a bit of different priorities with regards to getting control, get higher efficiency, get less complexity in our business, and make sure that we focus on like-for-like and EBITDA improvement. And that's what we currently aim to get to. If that in a couple of months is sustainable, then I hope I won't surprise you with a bit of a bigger CapEx number, because then at least returns are secured. But for the time being, I'm cautious.
Okay, and if actually you have to increase, not have to, but if you decide to increase CapEx because things are looking better and you have higher degree of conviction, is that a risk to dividends?
That it's connected. If our results are improving as they do, then I can assure you the dividends will for sure be there. What we will have, and it's a good point that you raised, we are limited in spending because we want to pay dividends coming out of a positive cash flow. We don't think it's sustainable to pay dividends where we're having negative cash flow. We as a management team, we have to make sure that the business develops in such a way that we generate cash in order to reinvest. If there is a decision to pay dividend, we have to take that into account as well.
Can you remind us up until which level are you prepared to lever the balance sheet, if you want to accelerate growth and continue paying dividends?
Governance. Are you asking about the governance or what do we feel comfortable with?
No, what do you feel comfortable with as a management team?
I think we are not really set to increase the leverage. I think we're on 2.1, and last year as well, and that's a level to 2.5 where we feel comfortable.
2, 2.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lower
All right.
is also
Thank you
good.
very much.
Yeah, but lower is also good, Leah. But
Thank
looking
you.
at the opportunities in the market, I think we should take that.
I just don't remember, Jan, if you've had that kind of leverage on a lease adjusted basis in previous organizations you've worked. Because 2 times right now means 3.5 times lease adjusted. And we always used to look at that on a lease adjusted basis. So it's kind of at the borderline. But that's my view. So thanks a lot again. And I do wish you very good luck in 2020.
Thanks.
We will take our next question from Maxim Nerkozov from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good evening. Thanks a lot for the presentation. I have a few questions on CapEx. So despite fewer organic openings, you target a slight increase of CapEx in 2020. Can you please comment if you include any CapEx for small M&As in your guidance? And maybe you could provide examples of the efficiency projects that you plan to invest more this year.
Okay. Now, M&A is not included. If you have the opportunity with M&A is difficult to plan, but if they arrive, then we see, of course, how we balance that out with organic growth. Getting to the second part of the question, the efficiency investment. So we're currently running a WMS implementation in order to be better in the whole goods management. We are doing a replenishment and forecasting effort to get better control about automatic reorderings of stores plus the connection to the suppliers. We're investing in SAP, ERP. We signed at the end of last year, 2019, a contract, which will lead to higher efficiency as well in accounting. So I think we are trying to look at a time management and workforce systems that we also become more efficient in controlling the number of hours and make sure that we pay the correct number of hours. We do a that's less CAPEX intense, but we do a top-down and bottom-up process analysis by department to see how we can slim and get better and quicker decision-taking, but also information. We're investing into big data, which should help us to, at least on the catchment management side, but also on the supply chain and logistics side, to be able to better understand customer demands and therefore improve our business. There's actually a continuous process ongoing currently also in the controlling to help the business understand the business better. I think that will help us improve our results.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Also, you mentioned in the press release that you will be seeking for small and medium-sized M&A, and I was wondering if you would consider a large-scale M&A if such opportunity appears on the market.
I think what you've heard, we just in a nutshell, what are we doing? We're downsizing our growth because we think that we should focus on our existing business. In that scenario, real bigger acquisitions would not be logical.
Okay, thank you very much.
At this time, we have not received any further telephone questions. I would like to hand our conference back to our hosts for any additional or closing remarks. Apologies, we have just had additional questions. Would you like to take them? We have received some additional questions. Would you like to take them? We will take our next question from Victoria Petrov from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking just one very short follow-up question. Obviously, with some cut in openings, you will be much more dependent on your like-for-like sales growth performance. Has this decision on the number of openings been made with an assumption of positive like-for-likes and especially positive traffic through entire 2020? Thank you very much.
Please go ahead.
Operator, we're ready for the next question, please.
Victoria Petrov, please go ahead with your question.
Thank you very much. My very last clarification question is on your number of openings versus like-for-like versus growth. When you have made the decision to cut the number of openings, have you operated under assumption that traffic will remain positive for the full year 2020? Thank you very much.
We took a decision to downsize the number of store openings already earlier. As you understand that the first quarter, this quarter, openings are initiated in October, November. So mm-hmm. There is no connection to currently trading. What I answered to Lena is, if this is sustainable, this development, we will come back and might adjust.
Understood. Are you comfortable with below double-digit sales growth? Because obviously your sales growth has been driven by openings in the last years, not by like-for-like.
Yeah, but the good thing is, and that's what I commented already in the script, if we see now what is the main driver of the like-for-like, then that are the stores before 2018. That's the old stores, not the newer ones. The newer ones perform well, but in the past, you saw that the new stores were actually driving the like-for-like. Now we see that like-for-like is also driven by older stores.
Understood. Thank you very much for clarification.
All right.
We will take our next question from Alexei Krishnovko from Prosperity. Please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Finally, the questions. Hi, Jan. Is it possible that you quantify this kind of decrease in gross margin Q4 versus Q3? Because it came down a lot, like 200 basis points. Can you kind of break it down between higher share of promo, loyalty, and losses, maybe, if possible?
Alexei, no, in principle not. We do not provide the bridges of margin. I think the components that have led to it are mentioned, and I think that's important to know.
Can you just please tell us what was the promo share in Q4?
Yeah, it was in the mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
But you got the idea, Alexei, that we also sold down old stock.
That
has led to an impact as well, yeah.
But one thing, which I wanted to understand, you said kind of it came from like 18 billion to 3.6, but I guess the starting number was not entirely clear. Was it end of Q4 or was it end of Q3? I didn't quite get it, to be honest, during the call.
End of Q4.
Uh-huh, okay. Basically from 18 to 3, kind of minus 15 billion rubles, clear. I guess my other question is like this. If you do the estimates of CapEx kind of line by line on gross openings, rebrandings, and what have you, and add them up, it's actually quite far from 60 to 65 billion rubles. I mean, like, really far, maybe half the number. Where is the other half?
The other half is in IT, supply chain, maintenance capex. So, like I mentioned, this time that we spent energy on the existing business to improve in order to get to a better customer value proposition, and that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And just out of curiosity, how many trucks do you plan to buy, and how many DCs do you plan to open? Because again, these are quite a lot of money with not so much of selling space growth. I understand the kind of long due IT investment, but I guess the rest looks quite oversized, to be honest.
Now, there's also, Alexei, as usual, there is an overflow of capex from 2019 into 2020. We have to finish the DC in Surgut, which we plan for this year, and the DC in Novosibirsk, which we plan for this year. And yes, there's also a substantial amount of capex reserved for internal transportation in the DCs and trucks. The exact number I do not by heart, but I know that that's part of the supply chain capex.
I see. And I guess the final question to Elena is, if we look at the current debt portfolio, what is the current cost of debt for the portfolio overall? You did mention the recent bond issues, which also we see on the screen. But what is the current cost of debt weighted for the portfolio?
The current portfolio cost is 7.6% on average.
That's quite cool.
And we are planning to decrease further because we see that we are in negotiation process with the banks where we have a long-term loan. I see that we have an opportunity to go down further in the first quarter.
Clear. Thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Arthur Galimov. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
And Thanks very much for the call. I've got a question about like-for-like in January, which is pretty good, and apparently around 2.5%, mostly driven by traffic, as far as I understand. So, Jan, I think the question is, what makes you think, what makes you feel confident that those improvements in like-for-like sales, particularly in like-for-like traffic you observe in January, are driven by improvements in assortment, product availability, logistics, and so on and so forth, all those operating initiatives, rather than being just a function of a pretty low base of last year, I mean, beginning of 2019, and also the function of increased frequency of visits, not necessarily due to internal company-specific reasons. So basically, is it the could it be the case that we're just seeing a reversal of the trend of last year when there was a high average spending per visit and lower frequency of visits, which is being reversed in January? So what do you think could be the split of the factors that drive current performance if you look at operating improvements and like more statistical base effects?
Yeah, thanks for the question. First of all, by not reacting on the like-for-like level, I'm not confirming the number that you are mentioning. Getting more to the question, what we see now out of the data is that we, as of October, we see an inflow of new customers. If you would see a reverse of last year, then that would actually exclude those people. So we need to find a reason why they come. So I think the first reason in October was the promo share increase. But in November, December, we have lowered that down. And we've seen the dynamic of new customer inflow actually growing. And we've seen the dynamics of traffic improving up to the level that it's in December positive and in January as well. So I think, and I am also like you convinced that there are a lot of elements that have impact, but I do think genuinely that the CVP, so the hygiene, the operating, the availability, but also the category management, are leading to a better shopping experience for our customers. Having said that, we also have the system of NPS, Net Promoter, and we've seen that that number has grown as well in the second half of last year. So people start speaking more positive about Magnet, and that, I think, is the biggest cause of them visiting us. And yes, we're gaining traction with regards to the commercial proposition.
Right. Thanks for this. And just to clarify on like-for-like number, I think you mentioned it's running above CPI in January, and I think the CPI number announced today was 2.4% growth in January year on year. Is that the number you had in mind?
No, what I have told you is that it is exceeding, so it's better than CPI.
Okay.
If CPI is 2.4, we have a higher like-for-like in January.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I meant. That's just a benchmark I referred to. And I think the second question is, I admit it's pretty theoretical, so I do not expect you to give the precise answer, but maybe just to give some sort of an indication. In terms of assortment improvement, in terms of the rollout of the new federal SKUs, which are in the new federal assortment metrics you approved, I think, in the first half of 2019. Do you have a rough idea in what percentage of stores this federal assortment is at least close to what you'd like it to have in the entire chain? given the sellout of illiquid and passive metric stocks in Q3 and Q4.
I have a view there. So what happened is that the category management efforts were done in the second quarter, and that continued in the third. What was our problem in the second quarter with the implementation of the new assortment was actually that on the shelf we had relatively a lot of old stock, so we had to clean that. The fact that we cleaned that in the third quarter led immediately to an inflow of new assortment federal, and continuing forward with the sale down of old stock, we have been able to get more and more of the active matrix on the shelves. If you look then federal-wise, we know by region what is actually the availability levels of the active matrix or the targeted matrix, and that is close to 86-87%. So there's still assortment that has been selected, which still has to get into the stores or first into the DCs, but that's a big, big step forward to where we were at the end of the second quarter, which was close to 72-73.
Okay, and just to clarify, this is the percentage of SKUs in the total assortment that comes from the new matrix, from the active matrix.
Yeah, so there is the category manager has a targeted matrix in mind. So this is what my range should look like. And then, of course, because you were asking the federal, how, to which extent can I get that range in the stores that I want it to be in? And that depends on availability of order pick locations in the distribution centers, and that depends on availability of shelf space inside the stores. Now, we've done a big effort on cleaning up shelf space inside the stores, and we also have done similar activities inside the DCs to make sure that we have better and higher capability for order pick locations. Now, that has gone from low 70 to end of 80%.
Okay, understood.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, and good luck for this year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arthur.
This will conclude today's question and answer session. I would now like to turn the conference back for our hosts for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and the next reporting is on 16th of March. Thank you.
This will conclude today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.